47 miles of barbed wire.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You're listening to Love in the 21st Century, hosted by Kat Chapman. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity, one-third dating insights, one-third self-love, and one-third compassion training.
It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
One child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn and another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them. You see, it's in the blood. Both kids are good and mom. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
You guys are listening to Love in the 21st Century. This is Kat Chapman. This radio show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Advantage Insurance Services. Local independent insurance broker Dave Dalton can provide for all your insurance needs. Advantage Insurance is proud to support KZFR and can be reached at 342-0540. For a quote or for more information, visit them online at AdvantageInsuranceChico.com. So we've been doing a five-week series on love and family. So I was thinking about what better way to talk about love and family than with my own family. And so right now we're actually trying to get on the air, my sister and my mother, Candace and Julia. Are you guys there?
No.
I've got Tamara in the studio with me, helping me with the boards, and so we're just trying to get these gals on the phones. They'll be joining me in from Kansas City. You gals there?
Hello.
Hello?
B-star.
You're not supposed to be around other phones. So this is my sister, Candace. Candace, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself while we're trying to get Mom on the phone?
Okay.
It's going in and out.
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great.
But yeah, maybe just, you know, where you're living and what you're doing with your life at this moment. We kind of get a little intro on who you are, and we'll try and get Mom on the phone to join you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm your sister. I'm out C-Star and out in Kansas City, out in Leavenworth currently right now. And just doing the family business, slaveries. And, I mean, if you want, I can just talk about, like, a little bit of my brief history of, like, getting to where I'm at right now.
Well, you know, while we're trying to get Mom on the phone, I figured it's something I've been thinking about, and for our listeners out there, you know, thinking about love and the family. And so what is the family? I've been working on this image of what family is, and so I've been thinking about the image of the family tree and imagining trees and how they endure so much transformation and change, whether that's through, you know, the seasons or weather, and they bloom and drop leaves and bear fruit, and then sometimes, you know, endure floods and lightning and fires, and how the image and the way that the tree functions around in its community changes throughout time. And so I'm thinking about also some philosophy behind family that I started to look into was a German philosopher named Hegel from the early 19th century. He talks about that the family is sort of like it's an institution that provides enduring framework for recognition between subjects. So thinking about what that family looks like. What family looks like to you, and what your version of family was growing up, and how that applies to your worldview.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's a lot. You know, we grow, and thoughts change, and love changes, and you know, you called me, you know, a little bit later last night, and I kind of thought about it a little bit before bed, and I'm like, what is family? And then, you know, I'm at work, and so for those who are listening, like, I work for the family business on our father's side. And so I'm sitting there, like, in front of the computer, and it's kind of a quiet afternoon, and there's Grandpa, you know, giving Buddha, my dog, treats. And it's like, it's noontime, you know, and it's just this relationship that we have. It's like we're here in the back room, and here he is giving this dog treats, and this is my life right now. And I thought about specifically, like, Grandpa and I and our history. And, you know, growing up as kids, we saw Dad, you know, every other weekend and in holidays and stuff like that. But Mom was our, you know, I mean, our intermediate family is so strong with Mom. You know, we had, like, taco nights. We have family gatherings. I mean, we're so strong with our cousins and our aunts on Mom's side. But I really didn't know much of the Chapmans, our last name. I didn't know much about the Chapmans. And so I was like, I thought about being a grandchild, and how my love for my grandparents was just so, it was every day a little bit, you know, and it was something special. And coming into working for the business, now I'm there just barely 2 years, about a year and a half in. And I was just this little grandchild coming in, not really knowing anything outside of just being this grandchild who got, you know, gifts on Christmas and hugs and kisses whenever we saw them on the holidays.
Sure. Now it's turned into a whole different perspective, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm looking at Grandpa, and I'm like, I look at him as a person and not just as a you know, a grandparent. And I feel that way with Mom too. It's like, as I grow older, I'm releasing this need of a parent, and I'm seeing them more as people.
Sure.
As, and these individuals.
And speaking of which, Julia, are you on the line?
I did make it.
She made it. All right. So those of you who are just tuning in, this is Love in the 21st Century. We're talking about love and family. And this is Kat Chapman. I'm being joined tonight by my mother, Julia, and sister, Candace. We had some difficulties on the phone, but now we've got them both here on the air. How are you doing, Mom?
I'm doing great, honey. Thank you.
Candace was just telling us a little bit about, you know, some how her views of family have shifted just in these past couple of years. And I was thinking about, you know, our foundations of family and what does it look like? And, you know, using this analogy of like the family tree and then how, you know, trees can grow and evolve and change. And I think very much like our perspectives on family can evolve and change throughout our time. And just to give our listeners an idea of your, you know, the foundation of your perspective, would you mind telling us a little bit what it was like growing up and like the dynamic of life in your family growing up?
Well, I had wonderful parents who were very dedicated to their children and to themselves. And I was the third of eight siblings, the third in line of eight siblings. And I was a very natural caregiver. So I participated a lot in helping my mother with just getting kids, my sister and myself. I have a sister just older than me, your Aunt Sally. And we lived a fairly, what I would consider, normal Americana kind of lifestyle. We lived in a cul-de-sac, and I attended from my grade school to my senior high to all with the same number of kids and same schools. And and then about my senior year, my father was then transferred from Springfield, Missouri to Kansas City. And I just thought that when I left home, everyone was like my dad and Jesus. And it just took me a while to kind of realize that I lived in a pretty unique situation, really.
Sure. So, very. I was just thinking about speaking earlier. I don't know if you heard while we were trying to get you on air, but this thinking about this philosopher's take on family and Hegel's insights to family, and speaking that it's this institution that provides this enduring framework for recognition between subjects, and he even calls it the most foundational and comprehensive form of recognition, and this is what informs our experience of ourselves and of the world. So, you know, again, yes, you what our little universe inside of our family is to that mind, and even Candace speaking of with Grandpa, it's one small version, and then things evolve and grow, and it changes. And so, are there any?
I remember what Candace is speaking of. My same time when I came around, and your parents were just a constant there, and then as you get into your late 20s, early 30s, you recognize then that the decision-making process that they make is because of their personalities, because they are individuals, because they are people that, and so I recognize what she's saying when you mature into a place where parents are people too.
Well, in that dynamic, you know, so just for our listeners out there, my sister and I are 13 months apart. So there was a divorce in our family, and we did see our father, but it was a lot of my mom and my sister and I growing up until our wonderful stepfather came into the picture. And so through step-parents and through our mom, you know, our family grew and evolved and changed in that way as well. And then mom coming from a family of eight kids, you know, that also means cousins and aunts and uncles and all these people to influence this worldview. And so is there anything, I'm wondering, you know, like mom, you saying that everyone was like your dad or Jesus, which I just think is adorable. Was there any other challenges that you faced when you did break away from the family and that your worldview had to change?
I think that was the biggest issue for me, is my not being naive about the fact that people were not always genuine in their approach. And being a young woman, I'll never forget a story when I worked downtown Kansas City, and this man would come in, and one day he said, hey, why don't I take you to lunch? And I was like, hey, yeah, okay. And he was older, but I thought of him as a parent figure. And anyway, needless to say, I realized that that wasn't the... I had to learn that people were not always who I just thought them to be, these nurturing, you know, parental, or even colleagues, vindictiveness in life, people that you walk with in life. It took me a while to become savvy to that, and I would say that's out of my parents. That's the only, but my work ethic, my ability to, my gift, I should say, to love and appreciate love I don't have a lot of things other than I feel like I was very, very blessed to have that in my life. But
Candace, do you feel like you had any worldviews that had to shift when you emerged from our family?
Well, gosh, I mean, I think, you know, we all have our own, like, trials, you know, and I feel like our family has gone through so much individually and as a whole, you know. I mean, if one thing happens to us, it affects all of us. So, I mean, the challenges have just been kind of constant, and you know, with even with our individual paths too, you know. I mean, for me, it's like divorce and then heart issues on top of that, and then losing parents and having siblings far away, you know. It's all just hard, and we all, but we all go through stuff like that, you
but,
know.
Specifically though, like I know for myself, with just my worldview, similar to mom, you know, we grew up in such a big family, and so there were so many examples of people loving us and people to trust, and it wasn't just our mom and dad telling us what was going on, but we had our aunts and uncles and all their spouses, and it just became a large group that we could rely on. And I know for myself, one of the biggest personal challenges was realizing that too wasn't what everybody was used to. And even touch, you know, right. I have some friends that I, you know, I hug and kiss and I tell them I love them, because that is so much the example that I was given. And again, very blessed, like mom had said, to have that growing up. And some people didn't receive that touch. And so recognizing sure. that, much like there might be an older man asking you out to lunch, that all touch isn't, not all touch
well,
is
I mean,
what everyone's looking
I
for.
I get kind of like the naiveness too. It's because we do come from such a large, loving family that it's second nature. Like, I just started dating this guy a few months in, and I told him, like, hey, listen, like, I use the love word kind of loosely. So I'm like, it's just who we are, because we have that genuine love. We see people for so much good, and I feel like we're really blessed to have that. And you're right, mm-hmm. not everybody has, like, those family building blocks in life. And I mean, every person that we've brought to, you know, to our home, Catherine, growing up, they're always like, God, I love your mom and dad, you know. I mean, it's always like people want to come back into our home. People want to be a part of our lives. And we have to really thank, you know, our mom and stepdad. You know, they brought us up to just love one another. And that goes back to mom's parents, our grandparents, you know, grandma.
I even have friends that when I go back to the back home to a class reunion, one of the first things they ask is about my parents. And I just
sure.
found that such a surprise.
Well, I won't have everyone out there thinking that we are just perfect, because I will tell you what.
No.
Family.
I thought if there was one thing I would say, that if you want an opinion, show up at our house. There's like a dozen, because
well,
everybody's...
And yeah, and in family too, it's a platform, I think, to practice this unconditional love, which I think we all know isn't easy. And so I'm wondering if, you know, yes, we were given this wonderful foundation as children, but as we have grown into these individuals that see each other as these people, do either of you have any advice on how you've, or any insights on how you've overcome some of those obstacles to maintaining that love and that connection?
Sure. Well, I find it interesting. Oh, go ahead, Anna.
No, go ahead, Mom. I know you'll lose it here in 3 minutes.
I just find it interesting. What did she say?
Don't worry. Keep going.
I find it interesting that the little quips that my father used to say, like, you know, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all. And then another one is, you know, don't say anything that you'll regret. He gave us those caution, and there's a lot of them that I live by, and I turn it around and I'm like, wow, that's exactly, it's basically an acceptance of others' differences and respect for the fact that everybody has their own paths, their own way that they have to, and to be careful what you say, because it does leave scars. It does leave, and it's not to say that you can't have an opinion. It doesn't mean that you can't have an idea. It means that you don't attack another personally or come at them with some negative put down. And I think as long as you refrain from that, it is open for discussion. All topics are open for discussion. That's what I have to say on that.
Sure. Candace, did you have any insight on how you've overcome some obstacles into maintaining that unconditional love with your family?
Yeah, well, I think part of it, too, I mean, I was going to go on a whole nother tangent, but as I was listening to Mom and stuff, I thought about my ex-husband and, you know, how he made me feel majority of the time, which wasn't that great, you know, and it's when Mom said, you know, use your words, and, you know, your words mean so much. And even Catherine, I think, like, a couple years ago, you were on this whole, like, you know, phonetics of, like, gosh, words mean so much. These vibrations that come out of our mouth are just, like, it's this energy you put onto somebody because you say something, and how you say it are two, but still the same thing. And I remember just being, you know, hated by someone so much, and how much it hurt, and or how he would get mad at me, and I would, you know, he would say things and he'd be like, oh, I never said that, or he would be like, oh, I didn't mean it.
Just all of feeling it, like, the power of those words.
I didn't mean it, you know. And it's like that for me made me realize the most of, like, wow, you know what, your words are affecting. And it affects the people around you too. And he would, whenever he threw fits, even at work and stuff, it didn't just affect me. It affected.
And how would you
work ethic?
How would you overcome? Like, was there any practices that you had that helped you find the love in those moments with someone that you had chosen to be a part
sure.
of your family?
Well, and it's like, so, you know, if you know me, I have these tattoos on my fingers, and there's kind of these Siobhan arrows going in one hand and out the other. And so it's always breathing in the good and out the bad. And I have the arrows pointing out on my heart line, on my heart finger, because I'm breathing out the bad, but I'm still breathing it with my heart. And it's this whole thing of, like, we're all reflections of each other. I choose to see myself in you, and I want to see the good, you know, and I want to be able to take whatever it is that I'm feeling hurt about and recycle it into this, you know, into this love and light. You know?
Yeah. And, well, then not to take it personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you
it
girls,
is, and it's their issues, not mm-hmm. mine. And mm-hmm. and I can't have that person's negativity affect my being. And
I remember when you were in grade school, and one of the boys called you a dog. They said you were a dog. Remember that story? And so
I remember who did it. His name was Amos.
Hey!
Be careful! And so anyway,
no last name.
And so anyway, I just said, "Oh, did he say what kind of dog? And you just, your little face just turned and you go, no. And I said, well, don't we think that dogs, there's some really great dogs? I mean, like, and so I said, well, the next time he says that, you just say, well, what kind of dog? And you came home the next day and you go, he didn't call me a dog today. You were so at the ready for him to call you that because you had something to say. You had, mm-hmm. you were given ammunition, and yet it wasn't to be angry. It was to take his word.
You just turned it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chained him around. But I'll never forget you coming home going, oh, he didn't call me a dog today.
Jeez.
Well, you know, doggone, maybe tomorrow.
These things kind of make, there was, I was talking with my partner about this, you know, kind of brainstorming about the family, and something he pointed out was how much of our religion sort of, like, when we look at the structure of a lot of religions, like, even, you know, Mom, you mentioned Jesus, so recognizing mm-hmm. that you grew up with this Christian, these Christian stories, mm-hmm. and that, and in a small town and in the Midwest, so I feel like the family structure was pretty, pretty classic, you know,
mm-hmm.
and how much that the structure of our families have influenced our spirituality, and even thinking of, you know, the model of the father and the model of, you know, these different within Christianity, and then moving along as we've sort of evolved here, and even in our own personal lives as we evolve, our families become so much more than just who is immediately at home, but also recognizing that not everybody's family is included, you know, Mom and Dad, and this kind of classic sense that there were some adopted siblings and there might be
sure.
only children, and there might be no father or no mother, or, you know, a same-sex parents and things like that, and also just kind of witnessing how spirituality at large has sort of evolved. And so I'm hearing you guys talk about, you know, not taking things personally and whatnot, and just wondering if you've found any other connections with the models you were given with your family and how that's affected you spiritually.
Well, I've thought quite a bit about my growing up in a church every Sunday and participating in the church. My father was, we were at church 2 and 3 times a week, and how that some of that has changed a little bit, and part of it is it was part of our social life, and so many people have other interests outside of that, and so of course it formulates a pretty strong bond with faith and the camaraderie that was there, but it has moved so much to different, and yet for me, I don't know that I am considered religious, but more spiritual. And mine is the fact that the one and only thing that I believe in is the pureness of love. I think there is so many other avenues and aspects that we as humans are and become through whatever situation has been given us, but trusting in the pureness of love, and of course then that's where I find my God. I feel like Jesus spoke of this and freed people of that, and today I know that there are a lot of people turning back to that community because it really does help you raise your children. It gives you guidelines and so forth to help, but as far as in my world, it was always prevalent in what we did and how we were raised, and then I translated it to you girls in probably a little different format.
Well, I was, you know, touching base with my altar at home before I came in, and I noticed it's just like a goddess fest up in there, mm-hmm. and got like all sorts of goddesses, pictures mm-hmm. of goddesses, little statues of goddesses, and I'm maybe thinking back on this myself. Growing up, even just, again, these foundational years when we were so little, and some of my first memories, it was the three of us and, you know, dancing around the couch, singing some Whitney Houston. And mm-hmm. and here I've got all of these female deities that I that I turn to for spirituality. So I feel like that might not be any coincidence.
Well, and then your brother, your youngest brother, your only brother, actually.
He's the only one we've got. Evan, shout out. Well, shout out to our brother, Evan.
He's, yeah, I think he's listening somewhere. But
we've got
from
two,
the time,
but we do have... We do have
you it. Have another. You know, you have a half brother too. Also, you have two. But with Evan, he had a very natural sense of a power greater than himself from the time he was very, very small.
Oh, gosh.
And
mm-hmm.
I find it quite enlightening, enlightened to be a part of that pureness that he presented as a. But I don't know if it's just that I was an older mom, and so I saw it differently, and it's in all. I feel children are very connected to a spiritual, a natural spiritual place, and anyway, but it was quite fascinating for me with his intuitive sense of it. So,
mm-hmm.
Where that comes from, I don't know.
Well, in thinking, you know, this is reminding me of, you know, and things you've shared with me about Evan and how he had expressed himself in such a way that reminded you of your father at one point. Mm-hmm. And just when you were speaking, I was just, again, back to this image of this tree and mm-hmm. this family tree and how, you know, we can lose these limbs that might have really punctuated the figure of the tree at one time. But when they fall, whether that's through, you know, a violent, you know, storm, or whether that they just fall naturally, that they end up decomposing and then becoming fertilizer for the tree and returning to the roots.
Nurturing that tree, yes.
Yeah, and so our ancestors and those who have come before us end up giving us the strength and these insights from a place that we aren't even sure of. And while we're speaking of that, you know, I know that actually for both of you, Julia and Candace, like, and obviously myself, there have been a couple of turns within our family fairly recently that have restructured our lives. You know, specifically, Mom, just losing your brother recently, and how that might have affected your view on family. Do you have any insights on how that experience has been for you?
Oh, I am. I find it interesting, amazing, great that each of these relationships that you have, and now with my brother, that he was a part of a unit. There were eight of us, and we were a part of this unit, and I just didn't contemplate thinking of losing someone right now, and when he came up with this cancer last spring, we had just been out. You had gotten to see him, and Evan and myself, and he wasn't sick at the, or he didn't know of his illness at that time, and now it struggled, and he was quite what do I want to say? He persevered. He worked hard at his illness. He worked hard to do what was right. He was a beacon as strength for handling trying to make this better. And in the end, he worked so hard at it, and it didn't work out. And so I'm facing 60 this year, and I'm like, okay, if you're going to do anything, you've got to do it. And I think that's what happens. You realize that life is really short. And I do not, my brother lived a full life for himself. He did it the way he wanted to do it. And I am proud of him for his, for who he's been. And yet I know that I won't get to text him again, and I won't get to call him on Sundays, and I won't get to hear his perspective about the Royals game or the elections or what's going on in California or so forth. So it and I will miss that.
And I remember. And, yeah, oh, yeah. Pardon.
No, go right ahead.
I just remember you talking too about this new depth that you reached with it, you know, and some of the lessons that you learned from this experience, and maybe how it's shifted your view and perspective on love and through this loss.
Well, it's like people don't really leave you, and there is it's a Irish piece, I think, but anyway, it's about how death is nothing at all, and it's I'm merely in the next room, and I stressed for my brother's illness because it was hard, and I knew he was in that he suffered, and he always maintained a positive attitude about it, and he didn't tell you, he didn't call you and say, "Oh gosh, I feel just awful today." He was like, "I'm doing okay, I'm doing okay." He'd always say, "I'm doing okay," and where he is now, whatever dimension he's in, I feel that he is still just as real, and yet I feel like he is not in that place of suffering. And so it all sounds kind of like you hear this on the surface, but when it starts to become the layer or the fabrics of your life, it does create a sense of peace, and it is loss, but also on the other hand, there's beauty to it, because wherever he's gone, that's where we're all going to go, wherever that is.
Well, and I remember too, just recently, as this has all been happening, and reflecting on how moved I was, and how what can be triggered by the family connection. You know, I know that with my travels and living out here in California, I got to see, you know, more of my uncle, and a lot of the family back in Kansas City didn't get to see him as much. But then when it really counted, when things were getting pretty serious, you know, like a couple of your siblings, I know, flew out and were there to ease that passing. And I was so moved by that regardless of the time and the distance, and how that bond of family, and again, back to this tree and the roots, and like it kind of like brings you back to those roots and that foundation of like, hey, you were there at the beginning and you're here at the end too. And I really appreciated witnessing that. And also, you know, when we lost John, lost my stepdad, lost her stepdad, the next morning I went outside to, you know, it was the morning of his passing, and I went outside to make a phone call, and I came back in, and there were 13 women in the living room, and it was all, you know, aunts and cousins and all these different ages, but everybody just showed up, and they didn't, it's not even about, you can't fix it, but just being present, and you know, I'm sure there was some cinnamon rolls thrown in there somewhere, or some wonderful treats.
Yeah.
Food is always food. Yeah, definitely family always. And food, but just showing up in these moments. You know, and it didn't matter how present we all were at any point in time, but in these real transformative moments, family endures. And thinking too, just with Candace, I know that your life was sort of transformed with another passing as well. And just thinking about, and just these correlations as well with love and how love is fed through loss in a lot of ways. And your transformation to moving on and working with our family, working with Grandpa and the jewelry store, and how that loss has maybe transformed you in any ways, and how you perceive family.
Well, sure. Well, and to go back to, you know, our stepdad, and I'm going to like cry for the rest of this, but I won't. But, you know, I remember when he did pass away, and I had this dream, and it was before I even found out he passed away. And I told you girls about it. I told you, like, yeah. I even wrote it down that morning, and it was right before I was taking some massage, like my national massage test and stuff like that. And I remember telling Mom, like, "Mom, if he does pass away, like, don't tell me till after I take this, you know, just let me get through this." But that night I went to bed at like 11 and I woke up at 1, like I was late to go to this test. And it was so odd for me to be, you know, so drained from all of this, and then from, you know, studying, and then just have been in bed for 2 hours and wake up. Well, the dream was him dying, and then I felt him, his physical self. I remember feeling the stub off of his face in this dream, and then it all just dissipated, and then it was all surrounding me. And it was just this feeling of like, I know you're not here, but you're now more here than you were
right.
physical mm-hmm. on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a feeling that you have to go through, you know, that you have to experience through death to understand that there is so much life to live here, but there is so much more beyond too. And that death is a good thing, you know, it's a recycling. It's like, you know, like you were reiterating earlier before, it's like when you lose that limb off that tree, you know, it becomes the fertile for the roots in this tree again. I mean, it's just this cycle of life. And to understand death is actually a beautiful thing. And then so that stepdad, John, and then Uncle John. So when I came into this...
This is your dad's brother.
Yeah, this is dad's brother. This is separate from mom. So I, you know, go into this jewelry store, and if you kind of were catching in the beginning of this segment that I was talking about how I was like this grandchild coming into this store, this family business, and just sinking my feet into it just a year and a half, 2 years now. And then as this time has gone by, you know, I lose the essence of a niece. I lose the essence of this granddaughter, and we're just people, you know. But yet we share family, you know, we share these things. So here I am coming into this store with the love of jewelry. It's a jewelry store, wanting to apprentice my uncle, who's this gemologist jeweler, and not really knowing him, you know, not really knowing anybody. But then we created this bond through diamonds, through gemstones, and he lit up, even Catherine, you know, like he lit up by having somebody in his life take interest. Because if you know our family too, like John and my Uncle John and my Uncle Bob and my grandpa were just these three old men running this jewelry store by themselves. How? I don't know.
It's amazing though too, like it wasn't just anyone taking interest, but you can't deny the power of that bond, I think, with someone that's in your family. And even you know, with cousins we haven't seen, and you know, even with the passing of Uncle Drew, you know, I talked to Lisa on the phone just briefly, and it was surprisingly easy, though I hadn't seen her for years, and it was like you just felt this very lucid connection.
Yeah. You pick up where you left off, you know. I mean, there is, like, I know how we're trying to, like, in all of us speaking this evening, like creating this essence of like, what does bond us together? You know, why are we family? You know, what is it that builds us together? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it is this love. It's this unconditional love. It's this different type of love that you don't see. And it's like these family reunions. Gosh, we, you know, we are the master of family reunions, you guys. Like, we go every other year, and it's, you know, 50-plus people on.
Oh, gosh, more like over 100.
Yeah,
like, more like 100, yeah. But
sorry, you know, like 100 people. And, but yet, we are also intimately close to one another, you know, and it's like we just pick up where we leave off. And it's just these ties, it's these bonding ties through our grandparents and our ancestors. And it just continues, you know, It's who we are. It's our roots. It's our connection, and we can't deny it. You know, we can't.
And I do think you have to. I do think you have to nurture it. I don't think that without someone organizing something, someone saying, "Hey, this is what we're going to do." Someone. It's great to have a group text anymore, because you can send out information and people are able to
communicate
with people
mm-hmm.
yeah, easier, and it is an effort. It's not something that somebody has to start something. I know when Drew passed, our youngest sister was out in Seattle, and then our niece someone said, I just want us to be together. And so pretty soon this group text goes out, and somebody lets somebody else know, and we have this whole family in this house, and we were just wanting to be together through, and it was a beautiful thing because we were all there when Drew did pass. We had each other and could share that very intimate time together. But somebody had to say, hey, let's meet up. It doesn't just, it and that's what's really great about family. It doesn't just come from one place. Different ones have the insight to determine let's make something happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, in feeling that interconnectivity, you know, I'm looking at my notes here and on when I was reading again back to the philosopher Hegel and talking about the family, and he said that the family is specifically characterized by love, which is the feeling, it's the mind's feeling of its own unity. And then he talks about that love means that the consciousness of my unity, it's like the consciousness of my unity with another, and that I do not wish to be self-subsistent or independent. And if I were, I'd feel defective. And I really appreciate that it's like no matter what, we're a part of this whole.
Mm-hmm.
And
when people try to cut that out, when people, whether that's a parent or a child or a sister or brother, when they have decided that they have been wronged by someone, a family member, and they're like, they want to cut that person out, it's like you're literally cutting that person out of your heart, and it doesn't work that way. Then pretty soon that is that does become defective. You become defective through that, and I think it's important to recognize that forgiveness is for yourself as much as it is trying to forgive the situation. It's letting you continue to be whole and not defective. So I think it's a good thing that he says.
Sure, and also that, you know, this is the basis of our first reflections, and that we can take those reflections ultimately. It's like a microcosm that applies to the larger world, you know. And even thinking, you know, back to this image of the tree, I have this ring on my finger of a tree, and it's for the world tree. And
Taylor gave you that, right?
Pardon? Yes, good friend of mine. And again, someone I consider a part of my family. And so as I've grown and expanded in my life, this little microcosm of my family has I'm turning it outward. And then it's these people that I'm choosing, but then taking it in that next step and recognizing that tree holds everyone, and it's the tree of life, and it's the world tree, and that we can use these lessons. You know, I think the people that we attract in our families are the reflections that are our greatest gifts and our greatest challenges and our greatest teachers, as we are all in this school of life and this school of unconditional love. And so to cut them out is to, you know, omit that aspect of self and omit that opportunity to learn and grow.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's, again, I go back to, it's not easy. This is, I mean, we're all talking, you know, really sweetly about all of our love and all that stuff. And it does come with an effort. It doesn't just happen. It becomes it's a practice and a practice. And pretty soon it does become a more natural part of ourselves. But, I mean, I do believe people are naturally jovial, or they're naturally kind of somber, or whatever that personality trait is. But in all of those things, looking or seeking for the higher ground of relationships or understanding, and it doesn't mean, as Candace had talked about her relationship with her first husband there, that no matter how much you want something, you have to recognize that it doesn't. What did I do? What did I say?
It's Buddha. Buddha's going
nuts. It's the dog.
The dog.
He hears your voice, Mom.
My Buddha.
Like,
I think it's hard. I'm proud of Candace for recognizing that this wasn't helping her grow as a person, and it was good that decision was made. As hard as it was a decision that was best.
And I think too, you know, we're really lucky in the model of family that we were given on like a very, you know, foundational level. But I do know that there are people that have members in their immediate family and blood family that aren't immediately nurturing either. And so I think a part of that love is love of self. And ultimately, you know, there's some pruning to that tree. There's, I mean, I don't think it means that you have to wish any ill upon anyone, but I think, you know, it's not all butterflies and rainbows, and it's not all super easy. And sometimes we're not ready for certain reflections and ultimately feeling that we can forgive someone and hold space for someone, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're going to be immediately in our lives. And I think that's okay too.
Well, when your stepdad and I, generated our family, created our marriage, and you have your sister Carrie, Don John, and then I had you two girls, and then we had Evan, and I've often thought of it as puzzle pieces that came together and made the picture, and before that all put together, and so it didn't. And I think there are a lot of families coming together as blended families, having multiple parents and so forth, and my guideline through it all is that you just respect each other. It isn't a natural thing.
I mean, it is and it isn't. You know, it's like when you look at a mother and a newborn child, and like that bond that's just there, and like there are some things that are just in us
to realize.
And yeah, but it does take practice. Life is a practice, and I appreciate all the practice I've had with you gals.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'm continuing to practice
every day. In fact, I think that was one of the best insights you'd given me at one point was, I've had such a gift to have all these reflections with you, and I can call you and talk to you about what I need or what's going on in my life, and reminding me of that practice, and we can just start again. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of wrapping things up here with Love in the 21st Century. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And just wanted to see if Candace or Julia, do you have any last words here that you'd like to share, and any insights on love and family as we kind of top off the hour here?
Well, I love you guys.
Oh, I love you too.
Love. I have both of you kind of like on the phone. Real quick story. So my friend Latigo is down in like Mexico right now. And you all know who are listening and kind of know me. I have this pacemaker defibrillator. I have this heart issue. He met one of the guys on the team with that invented the pacemaker or the defibrillator. And so it was just kind of with us talking about connections and love. We're all connected. You know, you never know who your family is going to be. You know, you never know who you're going to meet in life that you bring in that will never leave you, you know, and love is a great thing. And I'm really grateful for the women in my life. So, and the people, my family, and our immediate family. It's just, it's a beautiful life we live in. And I'm grateful for everyone. Grateful for it all.
All right.
And
well,
Buddha.
Yes, I'm so glad that Buddha had a chance to share his growls on air, and I thank you both for signing in with me today and helping me make this radio debut. I appreciate your support, your love and support, and maybe you all take these, you know, these insights and lessons and apply them, you know, as our family, our sense of family can grow, and hopefully, you know, to one world family would be a nice goal. So let's try and
kumbaya.
Beam these family vibes out to the greater universe. So I'm gonna wrap it up here. We've got a little Hightower moment for KZFR, and then some coming up next. Be tuned in to Ecotopia here at 6 p.m. Thank you again for tuning into Love at the 21st Century, and I hope that you're all moved by some words that we'll have in closing by Miss Dolly Parton. Thanks for tuning in. Cheers, y'all.
The human resources departments of huge corporations are known for issuing helpful bulletins to employees, such as this one. The beatings will continue until morale improves. Beatings of workers these days take the form of slashing wages and benefits, offshoring jobs, busting unions, and generally disparaging and disrespecting the people who produce their products. It's a hell of a way to run a business. Consider the hellacious greed of Glencore, the 10th largest corporation in the world. Never heard of it? No surprise, for the New World Order is dominated by such octopi that snarf up brand names and suck out profits. Glencore, a $233 billion Swiss commodities conglomerate, gobbled up Alcoa Aluminum Corporation in 2007, which in 2001 had swallowed Reynolds Aluminum. Caught in this frenzy of corporate feasting are 450 steelworkers in Gregory, Texas. Employed by a company named Sherwin Alumina, which first was a subsidiary of Reynolds, then Alcoa, and now Glencore, they are top-quality producers of aluminum. In 2014, however, the highly profitable Swiss conglomerate rewarded their productivity by demanding deep cuts in their pay and benefits. When the members of the Steelworkers Union rejected this insulting proposal, Glencore's greedmeisters locked the 450 workers out of the plant, hoping to break their morale and bully them into accepting the raw deal. But this ploy only intensified the steelworkers' resolve to reject such gross unfairness, turning their picket line into a symbolic stand against all global corporate elites who've adopted anti-worker thuggishness as a normal business practice and a core corporate value. This is Jim Hightower saying the gutsy steelworkers in Gregory, Texas are not only standing up for themselves, but for you, me, and workaday people everywhere.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
When it's family, you forgive them, for they know not what they do. When it's family, you accept them 'cause you have no choice but to. When it's family, they're a mirror of the worst and best in you. They always put you to the test, and you always try to do your best, and just pray for God to do the rest when it's family. Some are preachers, some are gay, some are addicts, drunks and strays, but not a Some are lucky, others ain't. Some are fighters, others faint. Winners, losers, sinners, saints, it's all family. And when it's family, you trust them and your heart's an open door. When it's family, you others for. When it's family, you love and hate and take and give some more. Somehow you justify mistakes, try to find some better way to solve the problems day to day in the family. Take the trouble as it comes and love more than anyone. Good or bad or indifferent, it's still family. You choose your lovers, you pick your friends, but not the family that you're in. No, they'll be with you till the end.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And next up is Ecotopia. And before we begin Ecotopia this evening, we want to introduce Jake Davis. He's president of Chico350.org. He has an announcement concerning tonight's city council meeting, which begins shortly. Welcome, Jake Davis.
Thank you.
Yes.
Try that. Can you hear me? Oh, there we are.
We got you now.
Thank you, Chuties. Pleasure to be here.
So, Jake, tell us what's happening at City Council tonight, why you're concerned about it, and why you'd like people to get down to City Council and make their voices heard.
Excellent. Tonight the city is going to be discussing the Chico Climate Action Plan, which is the goal of the plan.